This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
9:09, here we go into the final hour. Tim, check with Channel 4, make sure nobody was stabbed while Alexa was doing the weather. There's something going on back there. I'm not quite sure what it was. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. How you doing, Michael?
I'm good, Tommy. I'm good.
Man, I got to tell you, I'm thinking yesterday, you know, we're talking about free agency, maybe Saints not making any moves, maybe not having the money. I don't know. How the heck they wind up with Justin Reed? First of all, for people that didn't watch the Chiefs this year, tell us about Justin Reed, because for those of us that did, we know all about him.
Yeah, he. I saw him. I don't know him as well as Eric, his brother, his older brother. He was a first-round pick of the 49ers, and, man, he was a big-time player at LSU. Mm-hmm. But Justin decided to go to Stanford. He went to Dutchtown High School in Baton Rouge, and very good player there, really smart guy. Look, you ain't – and I joke with him at one of the camps he was at with us that, man, you ain't getting into Stanford with no expired driver's license. He got a big kick out of that, but – he was a third round pick of the Texans, Houston Texans, played out his spot there, became a free agent. Kansas City immediately tried to get him and were able to sign him. We get a chance to work with three of the defensive coaches on the Chiefs each and every year at Louisiana Line Camp. And they praised him about he's always in the right spot to make a play. Smart, instinctive, a tough guy who comes up the seam fast in run support, a good tackler. He's gotten better on the coverage part of the game. And so you're getting a guy who's played in three straight Super Bowls, got two winning rings. Well, he got a third ring too. Well, he will get one. It's not the winning one, but he got it, understands this game at another level, great athlete. And he brings certainly that air of confidence, having been there, done that, understand what it takes to get to the Super Bowl. And he has played with Tyrann Mathieu. And so there is that communication part. And you know, a lot of times people don't get in the secondary, but all these passing off of receivers. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be able to communicate well. And that's one thing Justin Reed does very, very well, was given a lot of praise about. He puts people in the right spot. He knows what to do, but he makes sure everybody else knows what to do.
So take me through the position of safety and how it's changed since the days of, I'm just going to pick two Saints safeties at random. Russell, who is this guy that could knock your lights out, number 20? Russell, I can't remember his last name.
Russell Gary,
yes, or Tommy Myers, the free safety. Explain how the safety, and that's going way back, but tell me how the play of safety has changed with the nickel and the different packages and so forth. Is there such a thing as a strong and a free safety anymore? Are they all hybrids?
It's all hybrid, and it's all interchangeable, and that is one of the things that I think they brought him here, because he's done all of that. He's played those hybrid spots where he's a strong safety. He's played up front almost like a third linebacker. Mm-hmm. He's played in the deep coverage part of the game. It's totally different. At one time, safety, last line of defense, okay? You got to cover and make sure no one gets past you. Mm-hmm. And in run support, you just shoot up that seam to try to make a tackle. It's a lot different now. I mean, things are a little bit different, because every play you might be in a little bit different spot. You might be playing center field and guarding, so to speak, the last line of defense on a deep pass. And then on next play, you ride up on the line of scrimmage like a linebacker in run support. It's changed dramatically throughout the years. And at one time, coverage part in the safeties, you didn't have to be really good at it. Mm-hmm. You could be average and play in the NFL. Not today.
You got to cover and you got to tackle.
You better be good at it.
Both,
you
right?
You better be able to cover and you better be able to tackle. And that's what Justin can do. He's not as big as Eric was coming out of LSU, but they have some similarities in their overall play.
6'1 is, wait, Justin Reed, has I got there right or not? 6'1? Yeah. Right? 6'1, 2 something? Mike?
Yeah, he's in that range. He's in that range.
So when it comes to Tyrann Mathieu, it seems like from what you said, this could be a little extra juice in 32's tank. Yes?
Also, too, to communicate where each other have to be.
That's what
the
I mean.
One thing with Tyrann. Tyrann's got like 8 degrees in football. I mean, he understands it at a different level. His instincts and his football smarts are there. And I think sometimes with a young player, and we get to hear it a lot from young DBs, they always try to get with somebody that can explain them the pro game from communication standpoint. They know how to play, but it's sort of the communication part. It's almost like if you're a pilot and you know how to fly a plane, but if there's other incoming planes, you got to know kind of where to go to miss that plane.
Or maybe the Blue Angels, something like that, right?
Yeah, it's very similar. And so in talking to a lot of them when they come to our camps, a lot of, man, I was looking for the veteran guy. I always try to find a veteran that's been there, done that. So he can explain to me on sort of our terms, not coaching telling you, but a player telling you, this is what should happen. When I call out this, this is where you should be out on the field. Okay, you're not playing in your backyard. This ain't junior high football or high school football. This is at another level, and what I see, Tommy, more today than I've ever seen is all these crossing routes, and that's the confusion because there's a certain point where you have to leave go a receiver to another defensive back, and then you got to know what you got to do.
And that's why I'm thinking about extra gas in is it Tyrann or Tyrann Mathieu? I forgot how to say it.
I always said Tyrann Mathieu.
Tyrann Mathieu's tank, because it would seem as though with the two having played together and both of them having multiple football degrees, as you said, that there would be a synergy that happens there where they make each other better. Accurate?
Yeah, and I think that's just the case now. And that becomes, I'm interested, the nickelback becomes a key piece here. He's not a starter, but he's three-quarters of a starter. Because on most teams, you're playing in base defense, maybe on first down, then all of a sudden, you're in the game. So you're playing over 70% of the time. And a lot of times, your job is to cover you've got to cover the inside guy. But sometimes it's a real big man, and sometimes it's a smaller guy. When we had the Super Bowl here, it was funny, because I had never seen a big man inside in the slot until Sean Payton got here, and he put Marcus Colston in the slot. And Marcus was like, I'd only played the X receiver. I'd only played out Y. I'd never played in the slot. And so he was, coach, could I get some film on the big man playing? He said, there is none. You got to learn how to do it. So now everybody sort of watched how Colston do it, and now you see a lot of teams playing that big man inside. Most third corners are on the smaller side, So now you see teams trying to adjust to get a little bit bigger corner to be your slot guy. It's a chess game all across the board, Tommy.
Yeah, and as you say that, I think of Chase Young. I think of Kalen Saunders with his interception. That you got defensive linemen now dropping back into coverage, which, man, back in the day, that wouldn't happen, or seldom would that happen.
You're not dropping four, put it to you that way. And we had Pete Jenkins on, and I wanted to have Pete explain to everybody the difference in the 3-4 alignment and the 4-3. And it's all a little bit kind of meshed together. It's not as distinct as it was. See, Bum Phillips brought the 3-4 alignment into the NFL. That was a college defense. It had not been used at the NFL level. Bum got hired by the Chargers, and Sid Gilman told him, do what you got to do on defense. And Bum brought in the 3-4 with the big nose tackle and the two edge guys rushing the quarterback. And now you see every team uses it to a certain extent, but Brandon Staley's base, if it was in Chicago with Vic Fangio, if it was with the Rams when he was the coordinator there, if it was with the L.A. Chargers, it was 3-4. Mm. Now, he didn't commit to that Monday when they had the meet and greet with the coaches. But I think you're going to see some form of that. And immediately when they signed Chase Young, it popped in my head. He's going to be a 3-4 outside linebacker.
It's so
hard. You need a bigger body type.
And somebody can move, and he can. And it's so different now between 3-4, 4-3 because it's play to play. Who knows? Plus, with the nickel, who knows who's playing where? Plus, you're standing up and you're rushing. Maybe you're dropping back into coverage. I don't think there's a lot of teams that consistently play one or the other, are there?
No. Basically, it's all kind of intertwined. And even Vic Fangio, who has done this forever, he was always a 3-4 defense guy. But he has sort of morphed a little bit. And, you know, his comment is, if I got the players, I know what to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I got, and with the Eagles, man, he got them. Okay, he got talent. So it doesn't matter what defense he runs. He got guys that can get after the quarterback and stop the run. But, you know, if you shy on talent, which this team, I mean, come on, they don't have an overload of talent in that front seven. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have to use a lot of different fronts. And I think that's what you'll see in year one from Brandon Staley's defense.
You're reading ahead, Mike. That's the next question, what that's likely to look like. Because I love offense. Everybody does. But, man, you know, it's cliche about defense winning games. There's nothing I love better than a strong defense. We'll talk about what the Saints' defense is likely to look like. Also, the rest of free agency. Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. We all know who he is. He's a good friend. We'll be back when we return to talk more about the Saints' defense and what it's likely to look like under new defensive coordinator Brandon Staley when we return on WWL. 928, talking to Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk about the Saints, and Justin Reed. Mike, what do we know Brandon Staley's time with, let's see, he was with the Rams, right? Who else? The 49ers?
He was with the Bears.
The Chargers.
He was with the Bears with Fangio, and then he went to the Rams, then L.A. Chargers, where the head coach, and last year he was, whatever it was, consultant for the 49ers.
So what can we look for in a Brandon Staley defense?
I would have told you a 3-4 alignment because that's basically what he has run everywhere he's been. But the fact that he didn't commit to it tells me that I think he sees maybe I don't quite have all that type talent here at linebacker. Not so much up front. Because once Davin Godshaw got brought in, he's going to play the nose for you. And I would move Brissett over to a defensive end in a 3-4. So you would have people that could do that. The thing about it is linebackers, the 3-4 guys. Because you got to be big enough to take on a tight end and yet quick enough to fall back a little bit in coverage. Yet your skill set really is to rush the quarterback. That's what you're looking for. Tommy, the crazy thing is, I did an interview yesterday about this. The one thing that I think will dramatically change college and pro football is I see it in the five camps that I work here in Louisiana. I see a young man who's 6'2 or 6'3, and they're about 210 as a high school player. And I ask him, what position you play on defense? Oh, no, sir, I don't play defense. I'm a wide receiver, or I play inside in the slot. Mm-hmm. The numbers aren't there, and it's going to affect the LSUs and Alabamas and Ohio States of the world. You're going to see it there first. Look at LSU's linebackers today. Those linebackers are on the smallish side. Mm-hmm. And even Alabama, they're looking at smaller guys. Back in the 70s and 80s, you had the hybrid players, and they were playing defense. Today, Hey, I want to catch the ball. So in Brandon Staley's defense, you're looking for that kind of hybrid outside linebacker defensive end. To me, you got one for sure. I think Chase Young could play that, easily play that. The other body type that would fit would be Isaiah Foskey. Now, other than play special teams, he ain't done squat with the Saints. Nothing. But he does have the body type that he could play that edge guy in a 3-4 defense.
Let's talk about Derek Carr and the Saints' move. First of all, let me take a step back with Justin Reed. Do you know how the Saints were able to afford him with the salary cap or how much you're paying him?
There's a lot of money movement. You got to be an accountant to sort of figure out everything. And again, you had to go back to the bank of Carr to get yourself under the cap. And you know he's not going to be here in 2026, but you kind of forced to do it this year. And I knew they had some money to play with, but I'd have to see how the deal is structured, because a lot of times – the devil's in the details on the back end of that contract. But here's my deal. If it's Chase Young, who's 25, if it's Justin Reed, who's 28, I'm going to play the young player. I'm not giving that type deal to a 31-year-old player. Not doing it. Sorry. I appreciate his time here, and I would tell him, hey, thank you. We really appreciate it. But 90% of the time, I got to move on. It's a young man's game. And so I think maybe part of this is you've got yourself in a little bit of trouble. You've been too loyal, Tommy.
Yeah.
Been too loyal to guys that have been here. And there is a certain likability about that, but this is a cutthroat business.
Well, and
you see it with the Eagles. Hey, Chauncey Garner-Johnson, He said the comment yesterday. Howie Roseman said, I'm going to be here for a long time. And then he traded him off yesterday. It goes to show you this is a cutthroat business of wins and losses.
Well, Art Rooney, years and years ago, Art Rooney said it's the hardest thing in the world. Well, was it the Noel that said the hardest thing in the world is cut a player a year before you have to, right, or should?
Yeah, Parcells' deal is, I'd rather cut a guy a year too early than a year too late.
So along those lines.
And he's right. He's right. And it's tough.
Number 32. Go ahead. Finish.
It's really tough because you've been through so much with those guys. And they've given you everything they've gotten. Their families are here. And you know when you send them off, it's not just the player. It's the wife, is the kids, everything. It changes for them. That's why, you know, I always say this about my wife, because I put in some crazy hours many years ago and a little bit today, but not as much. But, yeah, coach's wife, good Lord. And the good man above watches you, because you got a lot of responsibilities if you're a coach's wife.
So let me get to number 32 real quick, then we'll talk about the rest of free agency. Tyrann Mathieu is 32, both number and age. He's going to be 33 on May 13th. You think he's still got something left in the tank?
I think he's got something left. He's not the Tyrann of LSU days. I think a lot of people still look at that. Tyron goes down, he's on the Mount Rushmore of LSU players. He's there. You know, he's looking at Cannon. He's looking at Jaden Daniels. He's looking at Joe Burrow. I mean, that's how good Tyron was at LSU. But, you know, for the time, he's indiscriminate about who he rings their bell. Everybody gets the bell rung. And at Tyron, I think he would like to play one more year. And I'm sure they had that conversation with him about finishing it out here with the Saints. But you can tell he's not as quick. He's not as fast. He was never a great tackler. He was a good tackler. And he kind of submarine you. He'd go low and kind of clip you that way. But, you know, you're not as good. And I think sometimes media fans, we remember the younger guy, okay? Just look at Aaron Rodgers today. Could you imagine 5 years ago Aaron Rodgers out in free agency? And here we are a couple of days into it, and he's still unsigned.
So real quick about Tyron Matthew, 5'9", 2-something. Was he a hip tackler?
And you're stretching.
Yeah, but did that was he a hip tackler? Did that new rule hurt him?
No, Tyron was always the guy that went sort of low. You know, he was right around the ankles, or he sort of submarine you. That's always sort of been – come on. If Tyron is 5'8 and a half, he's in that range. He's probably – his second number's a 9. He's 190-something. He, if you hit a guy high in this league, he's taking you for a ride. Tyron was always kind of angle and try to get you on a low shot. And so he was never a high guy. So the hip tackle really wouldn't affect Tyron that much.
All right, real quick, what about free agency? Because they freed up the money. They made the signing of Eric Reed. I don't know if they have any more money to spend in free agency. Do you know? And again, it's I don't mean this anything in a negative way about the Saints when I say this, but it's kind of like laundering money for the cartel, the way the salary cap thing works. And again, I'm not saying the Saints are a cartel. I'm just saying in terms of moving cash around, I don't understand half of it. As far as you know, is there more room to be made?
There is more room, and if I had that money, I'd go get me a big offensive lineman.
Okay.
I'd go get me one, a veteran one. I'd draft one, but I'm going to go get me one. You're not winning in the trenches, and that's where you got to beef up. I can find me a receiver. I can find me a corner. I can find me another running back. Man, a big man? The man above just made that big that can play football, just a few of them. So if I got any extra cash, offensive line's where I'm going to stick a while.
You got a name for me?
Don't have a name, but I know a position.
Okay. What tackle, guard? What are you talking about?
I would look more toward a guard. Man, that left guard position to me, it didn't play well. Man, listen, I give Fuaga a lot of credit. First year guy playing left tackle and that left guard spot, goodness gracious. So that's where I would try to fill in. Bring me a veteran. If you're going to go with Carr, or even with, you know, you're going to play Rattler, you got to be able to protect him. And that's where you're going to get the worst pressure from the right side of a defense. So your left side better be good.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it as always. We'll be listening this evening. I know you got Jen Hale coming on at 5:10. Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller on Sports Talk. They'll talk about free agency. Then at 5:30, LSU men's basketball SEC tournament. Tigers taking on Mississippi State Bulldogs. Tip off 6 o'clock on WWL and a free Odyssey app, 9:39. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 9:45, quarter till 10, breezing through a beautiful Wednesday morning. And I was kidding around earlier saying I hope that Elon Musk doesn't fire the people that keep charge of the tariffs, because it's like filling in a bowling score after the game is over, trying to remember what you had in which frame with the tariffs going on and going off. I also hope he doesn't fire any meteorologist at NOAA needs when it comes to hurricane season. And Barry Keim joins us now, LSU climatologist, talk about what's happening over there. How you doing, Barry?
Hey, good morning. You're my favorite Shaw Eagle, so it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I'm my own favorite Shaw Eagle as well. Let's talk about what's going on with cuts to NOAA. And I guess before we talk about cuts, what is NOAA and what do they do? as it relates to hurricane season and predictions and those kind of deals?
Okay, so NOAA stands for the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. It's really the nation's weather, ocean, and fisheries agency. And it's kind of an umbrella organization that oversees the National Weather Service, National Hurricane Center, National Severe Storms Lab, Storm Prediction Center. So all these guys are involved in severe weather and severe weather, but it also manages fisheries and the oceans. We have the National Ocean Service, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and several others. So it's a very, very important group. And and what they're responsible for, daily weather forecasts, they monitor and warn about hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, tsunamis, fire weather. They manage fisheries. They help ships navigate the oceans. And, of course, they observe changes in the climate and the oceans, so be sure that we don't reach some point of no return in terms of some of the directions that we're heading.
So is that the same as the National Weather Service? The National Weather Service part of that, or am I confused?
No, yes. So NOAA is the umbrella organization. National Weather Service is an agency nested underneath NOAA, as is the National Hurricane Center and the Severe Storms Lab, et cetera. So all those are part of NOAA.
So when it comes to meteorologists and predicting storms and path and what's the word I'm thinking of? Intensity, every local meteorologist, they're getting the information from NOAA, correct? Is that accurate?
That is absolutely accurate. I mean, it takes a lot of money to run these computers and to fly planes into storms and that kind of stuff. It takes special expertise, and NOAA oversees all that. And it, in our forecasting, keeps getting better and better and better. Now with these job cuts, it's going to be interesting to see how we move forward and if we can stay on that track. I suspect probably not. I mean, one of the things they've cut were some of the hurricane hunters, the guys who do fly into the storms. They gather important data that feed the models that lead to more accurate forecasts. Now, that mission will still be there, but they'll be understaffed, overworked, and probably won't be producing products with all the accuracy that we're capable of. So that just puts people's lives at risk.
And again, I don't think anybody is for government waste, but you got to be selective in how you do it. And how concerned are you with what you just said and the hurricane hunters being cut, which has me shaking my head here? I don't know if whoever it was that made that decision understood exactly what they were doing and what the, first of all, to find somebody to even do that is crazy, right? But to lay them off, I don't know how you go about it. Once you lose somebody that does that, where do they go? How do you get them back?
That's a great question. And, and a lot of these folks that are being laid off are being recruited by other agencies in other parts of the world. Europe is, they see these folks getting laid off, and these are some of the best and brightest minds in weather and climate and fisheries. And they're going to get scooped up by other places. I mean, even heard China is recruiting some of the people that are being laid off. So it's going to be a very interesting few months to see how all this plays out. I definitely think that forecasts are going to get worse, though, under these circumstances. And NOAA is the rumors are they're going to lay off about 1,000 people within NOAA today, and in total
today.
Today, and if that happens as predicted, they will have laid off about 25% of their workforce since this new administration has been in place. So it's a big deal.
So what is that going to look like to the average person here in this area, who depends on the local meteorologist who gets their information from NOAA? When it comes to parades, forecast for that, and even more importantly, come June 1st, hurricane season?
Well, as I said, forecasts will probably get a little worse. We just won't have data to feed the models like we used to. And as a result, those cones of uncertainty will get larger with time. And there's a lot of cost involved with all these evacuations as well. So this isn't good for society, in my opinion, as we move forward with these cuts. This is not a good thing.
Do you know if the Louisiana delegation is working on any of this or trying to pass along the importance of the NOAA employees, hurricane hunters, et cetera, or maybe the region? Because it's not just us. You got Florida, Texas, a lot of political clout, a lot of skin in the game when it comes to hurricane season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, we have the entire Gulf Coast all those states have a lot of skin in this game. And as I'm not dialed in on the political side as to who's doing what and speaking to whom, but it's a very politically dicey landscape, let's say. And who's doing what, I really don't know, but it's a scary time right now.
As far as you know, Barry, do you know of a lot of people hanging around at the NOAA not doing anything or just kind of drinking coffee and not doing their jobs and all that stuff?
Well, I know a lot of NOAA folks, and these are some of the hardest working people that I know. I mean, they're wonderful. They're very knowledgeable, well trained at what they do. I mean, yeah, there are problem people everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, within NOAA, these are some hardworking folks, and I've worked with these folks for years, and I haven't come across very many slouches along the way. But there's fat everywhere. I'm sure every organization needs some trimming or can use some trimming. It just needs to be done correctly, and I'm just not sure we're going about this in the best possible way.
Wow. It just makes no sense to me if you can, A, find somebody that will fly into the eye of a hurricane, and B, is competent enough to do the research and provide valuable data, why you wouldn't want to hang on to them. Thank you, Barry. Appreciate it. Always trying to keep things factual and true. Barry Keim, Louisiana LSU, rather, climatologist. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got coming up when we return on WWL.